This hour of Kevin Miller in the Morning is brought to you by Tway Travel, your adventure travel specialists. Fighting for America.
Mr. President, in 2010, you called the results of the midterm election a shellacking. What do you call this?
Obviously, Republicans had a good night.
Fighting for Idaho.
The president continues to act on his own. He is going to poison the well. When you play with matches, you take the risk of burning yourself. And he's going to burn himself if he continues to get down this path.
Fighting for you.
Why isn't our government doing something about this? I'll be the first one to say it. President Obama does not care about postpartum Taylor Swift disorder.
I'm pretty sure that's why the Democrats lost the Senate.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. Thank you all for joining us. Phone numbers 580-5436. Tomorrow we'll be at Boise High. Thank you, CapEd Credit Union. Joining us now, Mark Kerkorian from the Center for Immigration Studies. Mark, good morning.
Good morning.
So, did we have a good day last week when we're talking about keeping America safe?
Yeah, I mean, clearly, and I'm saying this not in a partisan sense, because my think tank, you know, basically is hated equally by Republicans and Democrats, but clearly this was a rebuke by the public of Obama's policies broadly, including immigration. It wasn't just that. Obviously, Obamacare and other things factored in there, but immigration was a key reason the Democrats got their heads handed to them. I mean, you know, every Democrat who incumbent in the Senate who lost voted for the Gang of Eight amnesty bill, and almost all the Republicans who won ran on strong immigration positions. The only one who's pretty weak on immigration is Cory Gardner in Colorado, but he never even ran on it. He never mentioned immigration, avoided it as much as he possibly could, you know, in both ways. And so, anyway, the answer is yes, clearly. Oh, and the other thing that was good news from last week was the only ballot question that dealt with immigration was from Oregon, and it was about driver's licenses for illegal aliens, and it was annihilated. It was defeated at the polls 2-1. More people voted against driver's licenses for illegal aliens than voted for or against any candidate or ballot question. And this is Oregon, which is not only just Democratic-oriented in general, but the electorate that reelected their governor, liberal Democrat governor for the fourth term, same electorate, legalized marijuana. They also voted 2-1 against driver's licenses for illegal aliens.
It seems the people have spoken in a bipartisan sort of way. On the other hand, does that guarantee that once these folks are elected, will maintain their word?
Well, that's always the problem, obviously, because once the election is over, then the interest of corporate lobbyists who want cheap labor, the ethnic chauvinist lobbyists who want more warm bodies to pretend to speak for, the ACLU folks who just reject American sovereignty, period, they get to work. Because for them, it's not just one day a year. For them, it's a full-time job to push their goals. So that, you know, the fact is that citizens can't just figure they did their job last Tuesday, and, you know, it's all set now, because a lot of these lawmakers really are committed, but a lot of them, frankly, are, you know, finger in the wind bowls of jello that will go whichever way there's more pressure. And, you know, the election results clearly taught a lesson to a lot of politicians on the immigration issue. But if the Chamber of Commerce folks and the ACLU and the unions and La Raza and the rest of them badger them incessantly every day, every hour of every day, after that, you know, they're likely to cave in. So the point is, it's good news, but I'm only cautiously optimistic.
Well, let me give you the simple question from the simpleton here, Kevin Miller at 580KIDO. If people voted for these folks to say no to amnesty, if the majority of the American citizens say we want the border secured, we want a moratorium on illegal and legal immigration, why are their elected representatives, Mark, not listening to them?
Well, because, like I mentioned, this is a problem in a lot of different areas of politics where there's a broad public sentiment in one direction. But that broad public sentiment comes from people who have, you know, other things to do when they get up in the morning. They've got jobs, they've got other concerns, there's a lot of things that they're involved with. Whereas the other side of the debate has a handful of people whose full-time job it is to push their point of view. An intensity of opinion, an intensity of activity is what matters. The reason immigration's different, though, is that on a lot of other issues, you've got competing groups of lobbyists and pressure groups. You know, whatever kind of issue it is, environmentalism or which airplane the Air Force should buy, all of those kind of questions have two sides, both of them well-funded, and they have a handful of people that fight it out in Congress. And then the public, you know, sort of has a broad perspective, maybe one way or the other, and weighs in. But the point is, there are people in the arena on both sides. On the immigration issue, the public sentiment is overwhelmingly in one direction. But everybody whose full-time job it is to lobby on immigration policy, almost everybody, is on the other side. The labor unions, the corporate interests, the ethnic chauvinists, the anti-Americans, they're all pushing in the same direction. And that's why this is such a difficult issue, because it's not really a right-left issue. It's an up-down issue. It's elites versus the views of the public.
How does that impact, you know, it's great that you've spelled it out for us, Mark, here at 580K IDO. How does that impact, again, the average folks, when we're talking about the cost of illegal immigration? Does it impact schools? Does it impact medical? Because people, like you said, they kind of, election's over, heck, they're going back to their daily life.
It affects all kinds of things. The problem is often the effect is kind of spread out, so it doesn't always get enough people's attention. The first place you see, excessive numbers of low-skilled immigration affecting people is in jobs. The fact is we have had a loose labor market. In other words, wages aren't going up, where employers are kind of in the driver's seat and can pick and choose who they hire. We've had that situation ever since this immigration wave really picked up, and it's not a coincidence. It's not the only reason. Immigration is not the only reason wages have been stagnant for 30 years, especially at the low levels of the labor of the education spread. In fact, for high school dropouts, wages have been going down, and that's precisely the place where immigration is most disproportionately adding to the labor market. So first place you see is in jobs. On the other hand, it's never quite as simple as, okay, here's the immigrant, you're fired. In other words, it's often not that simple. It has an enormous economic effect, but people don't see it right away. You do see it more in schools. You see it more in welfare offices, hospital emergency rooms. You see it in the criminal justice system disproportionately. So the effects are, you know, all over. But what happens is that, you know, a small group of people in a particular place will get rightly exercised about it, and then nothing will happen, and they've got lives they have to move on to, and the elite ends up getting its way over and over and over again.
Mark Kerkorian with us, Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO from the Center for Immigration Studies. The schools are a troubling issue because we can't fund them here in Idaho, we can't fund them anywhere else, and yet, if you ask people for their identification, if you want to go from Meridian to Nampa, you have to provide it, but if you're here illegally, there's no way that you can tell whether these kids are legal or not. And quite frankly, it, as you've said, runs up the cost.
Yeah, and you see that in a lot of places. In schools, there's really nothing you can do about it because the Supreme Court has ruled that until Congress decides otherwise, local school districts have to take illegal alien students, whether they like it or not. But you really see it at the work site because, you know, there's a lot of crooked employers, sure. There's no question about that. They know they're hiring illegals. They're winking. They may even be helping, obtain fake documents, that kind of thing. But most employers aren't like that. Most employers who have illegal alien workers aren't trying to break the law. It's just that they're kind of, you know, they gotta work with what they got. And it turns out that making their lives harder is that federal law prohibits employers from examining or inquiring too closely about your documents you're showing when you get hired. So if you're an immigrant and you don't speak a word of English, and the employer is like, well, I don't know, you know, this document you showed me, I'm not quite sure that's real. You got anything else? If you say that, Eric Holder's Justice Department is coming after you. And that's not theoretical. There's actually an entire office in the U.S. Department of Justice devoted to going after employers who try too hard in keeping illegal immigrants out of their workforce. So this is why we need not just secure IDs, but we need the E-Verify system, which is a free online system that employers can use to check whether the information their new hire is giving them is true or not, whether this guy you just hired is lying to you about his name and Social Security number or whether he's telling the truth. That tool exists now. My center has used it. We don't do a lot of hiring, but we use it. For years we've used it. The thing is that it's voluntary. So a lot of employers use it, but the ones that we need to make use it, the crooked ones especially, are the ones who obviously aren't going to use it until they have to. And that's probably the most important change, more important than adding more fencing or more Border Patrol agents, is having this E-Verify system be a universal part of the hiring process so that the legitimate employers can comply with the law, and then we know who the crooked employers are.
How devastating has it been for carpenters, brick masons, laborers in the South?
Oh, all over the place, not just the South, but, I mean, any place where you've seen a big influx in immigrant labor in general, but illegal immigrant labor in particular, you see all kinds of tradesmen and contractors in real difficulty. The tradesmen end up being, you know, having to work cheaper and cheaper, longer and longer hours because there's just more and more competition. And what you see with contractors is that in order to survive, they end up hiring illegal aliens and looking the other way. And the ones that want to do the right thing are at a competitive disadvantage. And so, I mean, this really is – so in a sense, it's not even just an economic problem, which it is. It's sort of a moral problem, too, because you have crooked employers who are able to take advantage of this, basically snickering at their sucker competitors who want to follow the law and are patriotic Americans. This is why we need the law applied evenly across the board so that legitimate patriotic employers can do the right thing, and we can then focus on who the crooked ones who are ignoring the law are.
We're essentially wiping out the American workforce.
Yeah, replacing it, you know, is what it amounts to. Or, you know, there's always going to be obviously lots of American workers, but the percentage of working-age Americans who actually are working has been going down steadily now, even during economic expansions. And what we found in doing research both for the whole country and then also looked at a bunch of key states is that most or all of the employment growth over the past decade and a half has gone to immigrants. This doesn't mean Americans haven't gotten jobs. Americans get jobs and lose jobs. Immigrants get jobs and lose jobs. But when you add all of that out and, you know, sort of net it out for where the employment growth was, nationwide, all employment growth over the past 15 years has gone to immigrants, all of it, which means there's fewer native-born working-age Americans working today than there were in 2000. Even though the growth in the working age population mostly comes from native born people, you know, they're kids and they age into the labor market, they're not finding work. They're essentially being replaced by immigrant workers.
More coming up with Mark Corian, CIS.org, Center for Immigration Studies. Coming up, we'll talk about the push to stop amnesty. In addition to that, what about guest workers that are skilled? Do you buy the fact that, well, we don't have enough of them here? That's coming up next, 7:19, Kevin Miller in the Morning.
And Wiley, weekdays at 6. Now back to Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Your chance to win $1,000 today. at 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Good luck. Joining us now, Mark Kerkorian, Center for Immigration Studies. What about this issue involving what about this issue involving the amnesty push? How is that going to impact us?
Well, the what's happening here? The president has said that by the end of the year, he's going to unilaterally amnesty millions of illegal aliens going around Congress because he doesn't like the decision Congress has come to, so he's just going to do it himself. I mean, this is a serious constitutional challenge. I mean, really is a kind of, if he gets away with it, this is sort of, this is a fundamental change in the way our government works. And if Republicans stand up to him, you know, you've got the possibility of a of another so-called government shutdown, depending on how it plays out, because the only tool Congress has to stop the president, really, is the power of the purse, is to deny money for him to do this amnesty program, because impeaching him is off the table. It's just not going to happen. And so the only tool available is shutting off the money and saying you may not spend any money to do this amnesty program, however they would word the thing. The problem is he wouldn't sign a bill like that, and it would have to be legislation, and so basically they'd be involved in a game of chicken. And the stakes are much higher than they were last time there was a government shutdown. I kind of wish they'd not done that and kept their powder dry for this, because this is much more important. If the president gets away with this, what essentially the precedent he will have established is that the president of the United States can do anything he wants in immigration. He can admit an unlimited number of people from abroad and give them work visas, social security numbers, driver's licenses, all the rest of it, whether Congress likes it or not. I mean, it really is breathtaking and important far beyond just the consequences for immigration.
580KIDO, why in the world would the president do this, considering the consequences? I guess he just doesn't fear anyone, and he believes the press will protect him?
Yeah, I mean, well, what's Congress going to do? I mean, that's the thing. First of all, the election's over. This is why he specifically delayed it and angered many of his own, really strident supporters who wanted him to do this before the election, this unilateral executive amnesty. But at least, you know, some of the people in the White House said, look, this is, people really don't like this. And, you know, we're not going to do well in November, but we're going to get annihilated if you do this before the election. And if he had done it, it would have been a lot worse for the Democrats. I mean, they would have lost many more House seats. They would have almost certainly several more Republican senators, senatorial candidates would have won. So he put it off because he knows people hate this. The point, though, is that once the election is over, he's never going to be up for election again. He figures he's basically daring Congress to try to stop him. And my concern is that with the current crop of leadership, the kind of spineless guys who are running the House and will be running the Senate once the Republicans take over in January, that might be a good bet on the part of Obama. And he's also figuring, once I give these people work cards, social security numbers, driver's licenses, no future Republican president's going to take it away anyway, even though supposedly it's temporary. It's just politically not realistic to think after somebody's been essentially a legal worker for a couple of years that, you know, Congress is going to put, that somebody's going to pull the plug on that. So the thing is, it has to be stopped up front. And he'll announce it in December sometime, and Congress comes back in January. So basically, he won't have been able to actually carry through anything before Congress gets back. And the question is, will they act to stop him or not? And, you know, that remains to be seen, but I'm not optimistic.
Mark Kerkorian, Center for Immigration Studies, CIS.org. We always appreciate it. Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580KIDO. We apologize. Our phones apparently are down. I had a couple people emailing me and actually telling me that, and then we have the official word. But we will continue on, providing you with in-depth comment and commentary. And coming up, we've got a very special guest in the 8 o'clock hour, a young man Luke Kilcup will join us from the College Republicans, the president of the College Republicans here in Idaho. And we'll get a glimpse of the future of both Republicans and Democrats here in the Gem State. Coming up, I do want to look at a couple things. Well, I was going to say we'll get your reaction. I guess you can email me to the judge voiding the $60 million school broadband contract. Uh-oh. And if you haven't heard the comments by Charlie Rangel about the Tea Party, we'll take a look at that. And the First Lady will weigh in as well as we discuss race in America plus the broadband contract. All that and a bag of chips with Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO. Alistair Wanklin, our great, great friend.
Kevin, I miss you very much, of course, and always an honor to talk to you.
Join the conversation with Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, let's go to the phones now. Oh, that's right, the phones are down. We are wondering, though, whether or not the NSA had something to do with it, and people on Facebook, whether it's Rome, whether it's Tom Munns, whether it's Greg Pruitt. This is what I love about Greg Pruitt. He couldn't call in, so he decided to show up. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Good to have you with us here. I guess this is what we'll call, we'll make a bid out of the phones going down at 580KIDO.
Yeah, I started wondering about the conspiracy myself when I tried to call in. It said it was disconnected. I thought, oh, no, they took Kevin off the air. It's over.
It is. Oh, I mean, you know, I was listening to Alex Jones last night when I got the information. You're always, when they get you in broadcasting, you're always the last to know.
Yeah.
Hey,
right.
I'm not on the website anymore. What's wrong with that? Well, come see me. So let's talk a little bit about you and your group, the Idaho Second Amendment Alliance. You've been at gun shows. You've been fighting on. What's the latest with the Second Amendment?
Well, right now we're getting ready for the session to start here in 2015, and so mm-hmm. we've been getting some materials together for constitutional carry. We're going to try some new stuff this year, and we're hoping that working along with you and with some other gun groups that we can really get a good push this year on it.
Now, you've been a bad boy, you've been told to be a good boy. Which Greg Pruitt and which Idaho Second Amendment Alliance will we be seeing during the legislative session?
You're going to get the Idaho Second Amendment Alliance that doesn't compromise.
Mm-hmm.
So if that leaves us in the bad boy category, then I guess that's where we'll stay.
Well, as someone who covers activists, what's it like for you? And I, you know, we talk about people making a difference. And you and your friends said, we need constitutional carry. Our families here in Idaho need to be protected. And you, what was it, 2 or 3 years ago?
It was 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Weather colder than this, you're outside of Boise Gun Company, and you're passing out petitions to get constitutional carry. Can you go back to that day with us, those days, and bring us up to date? Has anything changed? Have you made a difference?
Well, we haven't got constitutional carry, so we haven't accomplished the goal that we set out to do when we first started this group. But I think we have made a difference. I think from 2 years ago to comparing now, listening to Idaho citizens and Idaho gun owners talk about what they want to see in the state of Idaho, constitutional carry now is at the top. It's at the forefront. It's what Idaho citizens are asking for, and I'm hoping that we can use that. Even though we got 3,000 signatures, and they pretty much ignored that, you know, that was just a small sample. We know that there are tens of thousands of Idaho gun owners that want to see Idaho become a constitutional carry state.
Why is this so important to you?
Well, Kevin, the more restrictions that we place on Idaho families in being able to defend themselves, the higher probability that they will become a victim of crime. If you've ever read More Guns, Less Crime from John Locke, that's exactly what he points out. The more restrictions that we add, the more crime increases. And so if we let people defend themselves according to the God-given right that they have, they'll be better protected.
But Idaho's a gun-friendly state. Everybody hunts. There shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, we all know the Second Amendment's about hunting. You know, it is a very gun-friendly state. We're very fortunate, but I can see Idaho becoming Colorado, Washington, Oregon, where our legislature slowly shifts to the left, and before you know it, we can't get any good gun bills passed, and that's why we think it's very important that we go at these now while we still have a chance.
You know, at 580KIDO, we've kind of gone up a little from 32-ish to something else in Guns and Ammo's annual clip. Talk a little bit about campus carry. You were satisfied a little with that, but did you believe that there was going to be so much opposition?
Yeah. I mean,
in Idaho,
the universities have a lot of sway here, and I kind of figured it would be quite a bit of backlash from it.
They're still mad.
Yeah, they're still mad. BSU took it out on everybody else by implementing $3 million or whatever it was worth of security measures that weren't necessary.
And they didn't even plug in for the first game. Right.
Yeah, it wasn't even plugged in. So it was a giant waste of money. We knew there would be backlash. It's all political for them. It's unfortunate, but we hope to strengthen that eventually here in the next few years. But our fear with the way that campus carry was passed was that we gave up a lot. I mean, there was a lot that was given up, and we weren't very happy with that. We think we could have got more. So
now, when we take a look at the western states, you're right. You can be Oregon, whose shirt I'm wearing today, Washington, or you can be Utah, Wyoming, or Montana. They have very different views. We're stuck in the middle. Who do you think, or what will be your biggest opposition to constitutional carry? You heard the governor exclusively. You asked him here that he supports it.
The governor did say he supports it, and we'd love to see him sign that into law. Our biggest opposition will probably come from some of the top law enforcement officials. Sheriff Rainey has told me, and many others, he's flat out opposed to constitutional carry. He wants to be able to take people's firearms before they even commit a crime. Now,
Sheriff Rainey has told you that.
Yeah.
That he wants to take your firearms before you commit a crime, like precog in Minority Report.
That's exactly right. In fact, there are multiple witnesses who were at a meeting that he was there. He opposed constitutional carry, and he said, I have to be able to, if I got somebody who looks like he's, part of a gang, I got to be able to take his firearm. And we asked him, well, have they committed a crime yet? He said, no, but we know they're going to. That's exactly what he told us, and again, there were a lot of people there that heard him say that. So.
What do you think that with all the violence going on in schools and at workplaces, that eventually the pendulum will swing back and we will embrace guns? Look, the East Coast is the East Coast, but the West was founded on self-reliance in guns, and yet you have these anti-gun folks running around. Do you think that we'll ever swing back where people will be like, hey, I've got to protect myself. We love law enforcement. It's great, but it's going to take them a long time to get there. When people are breaking into my house, I can't have an aversion to defending myself with a gun.
No, I honestly don't see a point now where we may get to that. Americans are very protective of their Second Amendment rights. I think we've seen that in Congress, where even the Democrats who don't like guns don't really put up much of a fight to try and take him or anything like that. But I think the divide will get bigger. Tragedies, unfortunately, are going to happen. That's what happens when you live in a free society. I see the divide getting, the people who support guns are going to support them even stronger.
Right.
And the people who don't like guns may not like them anymore. And so it's all those people. And there's a lot of them in the middle there that we got to win over to our side.
What do you say to people? And I've had people at 580KIDO come in and they say, oh, such and such is packing, and I was at such and such place and some guy was wearing a gun, and they're uncomfortable with that. And I'm thinking, well, that's on them. You have a right to, conceal and carry, open carry in America today. But what do you say to people that say, I'm a Republican, but I'm uneasy with people wearing, holding, concealing, carrying guns?
Well, I don't know there's much you can say to assuage their
right
uneasiness. I mean, it's Idaho. A lot of people here carry guns, and so I think people just need to get used to it. We're always told from the progressive left with all sorts of issues, whether it's gay rights or whatever,
sure,
get used to it. Okay, well, this is Idaho. We carry guns here. A lot of people carry guns here. Get used to it. In fact, be ready that if you're in a convenience store or Walmart and something bad starts happening, that good guy with a gun is going to defend your life in all likelihood. So at that time, you'll be really grateful that he had it.
Let me ask you a personal question. How much do you love it here in Idaho? We've talked a little on and off the air about that, and you've just retired from the military. Tell me a little bit about you personally, because we don't have a curtain here. We're all friends.
Yeah. I love it here. We had, years ago, we had talked about maybe moving somewhere else, and then I can't do it. I love Idaho so much, and now that I'm running this group and trying to fight for the citizens of Idaho, I want to stay here. You know, we love Idaho. We love our firearms, and you start looking at other states and realizing what you might have to do with your firearms if you move there. It's depressing. And so my goal is to make Idaho number one. You know, I don't really care for that ranking that the Guns and Ammo magazine has, but I want to make Idaho number one all over. I want people to say, you know what, I love my guns. I'm going to Idaho because that's where I can keep them.
On another personal matter, you know, you not representing anyone but yourself here at 580KIDO, we had the loss of life. We have a funeral today at Eagle Christian Church and another one on Friday. Veterans Day yesterday. Your thoughts, by the way, thank you for your service. Your thoughts on the cost of freedom?
You know, we're in a risky business, being in the military. I mean, everybody...
And people don't get that training is risky as well.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Very, very dangerous, especially, you know, in case people don't know, I work out at the building where we fix the Apaches and Blackhawks, and it's a very risky training business. I got a brother that's just getting done with flight school for Apaches. But, you know, at the end of the day, we all... When we sign on that line to join the military, no matter what branch of service, no matter what you're doing, you know that you're putting your life in the hands of the President of the United States, really. I mean, he's ultimately is the one that ends up deciding where we go and don't go. You know, it's a tragedy. You know, we ask for the prayers of the families of these two brave soldiers and you know, all the other soldiers that are still out there and doing this training. Keep them in your thoughts and prayers.
We appreciate that, and we want to thank you for giving us this award.
Yeah, you know, Kevin, you've done so much for the Second Amendment for the state of Idaho. You've given our group a voice, and we wouldn't be where you were. And so we wanted to give you just a little award to say thank you for all that you're doing between, you know, getting us on the air, getting Tony on the air, doing town hall meetings, trying to get gun companies to come to the state of Idaho. We really appreciate everything you've done, and so that's what we wanted to do today was come down and give you this award.
Well, I want to say something to you and you guys. I thank you for that. We're humbled to be able to have the opportunity to reflect and to promote what you do. And it's people like you and our friend Tony when he's not walking 27,000 miles and your friends that said, you know, I'm not going to sit home and watch TV. I'm not going to complain. I'm going to go out in the cold and I'm going to get signatures. And I'm going to go talk to my representatives and senators. And sometimes that's not a pleasant thing to do. You guys will make the difference. And we're humbled to give you some air support. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. I really appreciate it.
Now, here's some training here. And by the way, I like this. We're just going to have people come in as opposed to being on the phone here. Oh, my goodness. Liberal Steve will be here in a minute. But if people want to get involved with your group, to fight for the Second Amendment, Greg, what can they do?
They can find us on Facebook, Idaho Second Amendment Alliance. They can go to our website, idahosaa.org. And we launched memberships a few months ago. And so people can actually go online now and sign up for those memberships online. And all those, you know, we're all volunteer here. We don't get paid for what we do. And we will do whatever we can to defend your Second Amendment rights.
And you have gear now.
We have gear. We have hats, and we're working on some hoodies, window decals, the whole nine yards. So.
All right. We appreciate it, Greg. It is 7:51. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO. Good morning, Dave.
Good. Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580KIDO, Greg Pruitt with us, Kevin Miller here. Greg, anything else as we get ready to roll? Your thoughts on life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness?
No, Kevin, again, I just want to say thank you for all that your show has done to help us out and to all the Idaho citizens, especially those who are, you know, keeping up with what's going on with the Second Amendment. You know, keep your ears open. We got a lot of good stuff coming this year. We'll be fighting for constitutional carry, and that's, you know, when the session starts, we need people to start writing, calling their congresspeople. Legislators and really just this is it. You know, I think we're running out of time for where we'll be able to get this passed, and so we need to make it happen this session.
Greg, once again, keep your powder dry. Thank you, brother.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Let's get you to traffic with Dave. 7:59, Kevin Miller in the morning at 580KIDO. Coming up, we're going to find out about the future of the Republican Party. Luke Kilcup will join us, president of the College Republicans. And Well, I was going to say he'll take your calls, but if not, just do what Greg Pruitt did. Just come in and hang out, and he'll ask a question, and you'll get a follow-up. Heck, you'll get more time than you do on the phones, right? What do they call that? Adapt, improvise, and overcome? Anyway. And comments, opinions, Kevin at KIDOAM.com, always on Facebook. Kevin Miller, good morning, 580 KIDO. Serving Meridian.